All right. I'd like to welcome you to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and this is the December, the fourth edition of All Things Reconsidered. This is Bruce Birch again, and I'd like to welcome you to All Things Reconsidered for this fine Sunday evening here in Greensboro. It's actually raining outside, and they're calling for snow tomorrow. And actually, the president of our country, the current resident of our country, is going to be coming here tomorrow to spread, you know, to to catapult the propaganda. So this show tonight, we're going to do it. We got a wonderful interview with Geronimo of Sacramento, California. And so we're going to kill that down. But we have a wonderful interview with Geronimo of Sacramento, California tonight in our show, along with commentary on current political stuff that's going on. If you'd like to join us and chat with others about this show during the show, please go to the Tom Hartman chat room. You can spell that any way you like. I like to spell it the way he spells it, which is thomhartmann.com/chat.shtml. If you'd like to go there and you can chat about the show, you know, first of all, I'd like to kind of, you know, point you to that. Also point you to our website, which is allthingsreconsidered.org. And let's see, what else is on my list? Oh my goodness, just all kinds of stuff on this list of mine. Anyway, we'll get to some of the other stuff later on. But first of all, welcome again. And I'd like to start off tonight with some interesting news out of Venezuela and our friend Hugo Chavez. Apparently, his political party, MVR, won 114 National Assembly seats out of 167. And the opposition is going, okay, they actually boycotted the election because they accused electoral authorities of favoring the populist leader and manipulating electronic voting machines. So it appears that the Diebold issue has gone worldwide. I don't know who they're, I mean, you know, maybe that's something I'll look into this week, is to find out exactly who their voting machine people are, to find out if they are you know, find out what company that is. But nonetheless, the populist president Hugo Chavez, his party apparently has won 3 out of 4 seats, I think is the way it was put. Only 25% of registered voters turned out in that election, though. So, I mean, I guess it appears that they have the same problem we do, you know, with elections, in that, you know, the populace doesn't really care, you know, or isn't really interested, or something. Who knows exactly what it is? Maybe somebody will do a study on that sometime soon and find out so that we can fix that. But I think, you know, I think bottom line is it's laziness, but that's just me. Also, there is a story that's coming out of The Guardian that'll be tomorrow, in tomorrow's UK Guardian, and actually I think it's already posted tonight. But it says that the British government is guilty of breaking international law if it allowed secret CIA rendition flights of terror suspects to land at UK airports, according to a report by American legal scholars. Okay. Apparently merely giving permission for the flights to refuel while en route to the Middle East to collect a prisoner would constitute a breach of the law. According to the opinion, which was commissioned by an all-party group of ministers of parliament, which meets in parliament for the first time today, The report comes as the U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice arrives in Europe for a trip that has been overshadowed by the growing dispute about the CIA's use of rendition, and the term used to describe the abduction of suspects who are taken to countries where they can be questioned outside the protection of U.S. law. Rendition. You know, that's a, you know, to me it's a fairly, you know, it's a word that's kind of devoid of any kind of nefariousness until I just read that. Now I will think of rendition, like, ooh, rendition. And I'm joking about it, but it's really not joking. It's really not a joking matter. The fact that we are abducting people and shipping them to countries that where they can be questioned, read tortured, outside the protection of U.S. law, is just yet one more example of the why, you know, George Bush has to be driven out of office. You know, because I sure as heck don't see John Kerry or Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid. Although, you know, Harry's not such a bad guy, I don't see those folks doing it. So maybe we need to stand up and carry out some sort of velvet revolution in this country and take care of that ourselves. Also today, you know, I like to report on protest type of stuff because, you know, I think that the right to free speech and dissent is the highest order of any kind of human calling. But in Hong Kong today, apparently that an unexpected turnout of as many as 250,000 marchers in Hong Kong is a clear repudiation of pro-Beijing policies that would that could stall, if not kill, democratic aspirations in Hong Kong. You know, the policies, that is. It also speaks to the vibrancy of a grassroots democratic awakening that has been slumbering in China's most developed commercial city. The protest, which filled Hong Kong's downtown today, was sparked by a proposal that would indefinitely delay a much-desired introduction of a one-man, one-vote system. It was also fed by statements from Hong Kong tycoons that the city was not mature enough to govern itself. So the ruling class basically said, you can't trust the rabble, and the rabble turned out to try to defeat that. So we'll see what that, how much, you know, how what kind of impact that'll have. That's out of the csmonitor.com if you want to check out that story. You know, and again, what I kind of find amazing is that when we have over 500,000 people marching, it's hardly ever mentioned. But then if there's a 250,000 marching there about democracy, all of a sudden, boom, it's on the front page of the newspaper. But, you know, that's another interesting thing that seems to pop up. We have an interview tonight with Geronimo of Sacramento, California. She is a returning guest to our show, and she's actually in the chat room now. If you want to go to tomhartman.com/chat, go to tomhartman.com, click on chat. It'll take you right to the chat room where you can go and sit in and talk with the actual lady herself. She is in the chat room, and she's waiting to hear this interview that we did yesterday. Fantastic, or Friday, I should say. Fantastic interview, and so what we're going to do is we're going to go right over to that interview now, and we will pick up on the other side of this interview with some other comments on some other stuff. So thank you for joining us, and this is the interview that I did with Geronimo this week. All right, I'm on the line with Geronimo, Sacramento, California. How are you doing tonight, Geronimo?
Well, I'm fine.
It's good to have you back on All Things Reconsidered. It's been a while. It's been, what, probably 3 or 4 months?
At least.
Since back in, I would say, August or something.
August, yeah.
So you're back with us tonight, and you're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking, having a conversation, if you will, about a book called The Wimp Factor, Gender Gaps, Holy Wars, and the Politics of Anxious Masculinity. And this is by Stephen J. Ducott. You know, I know that there's sort of like an overall message that this book is delivering. What's that overall message?
He's done a psychological analysis of American politics, which attempts to illuminate the gender subtext of political behavior. In other words, you know, what we're seeing on the national stage now, the Republicans strutting around, The Republicans have sexualized the debate, and they've taken the most intimate of relationships that affect everyone, which is the man-woman relationship. And they're using it to, you know, their advantage and to our disadvantage.
In what ways are they doing that?
Well, first of all, you know, I mean, well, the reason I was interested in reading this book was that, I mean, not that I paid them much attention to politics before, but I really observed that there was a lot of sex, like, surrounding this administration. I mean, every single day in chat or, you know, I mean, everywhere, I'd be hearing all these sexual metaphors, you know, in the chat room I'm referring to. Like, we're screwed, the Democrats bend over again, the Democrats just leaned over and spread them. And then what some guy told me last week in chat is, where are the Democrats going to find a candidate who isn't pussy whipped?
Wow.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, this administration is the most phallic administration I've ever seen in my entire life. And I'm like, I was wondering why, you know, I mean, I can see, I mean, they're all, it's all puffed up. It's illusory masculinity. It's hyper-masculinity, and they're getting away with it. Why? You know, why are some people falling for this and other people aren't?
Well, I think it's an interesting observation. And since we just barely talked about this a little bit before this conversation, it's given me some time to think about, you know, how true it is that what they've done is sort of trot George Bush out as this swaggering John Wayne type, you know?
I know.
When in actuality, he's more like he was a cheerleader in college.
You know, they're presenting him as the epitome of hyper-masculinity. And he's one of the biggest cars I've ever seen in my life. I mean,
I totally agree.
It's all puffed up. I mean, there's no substance to it. It's all swagger. I don't know why they don't see that. I mean, when he was strutting across that aircraft carrier, I mean, I was absolutely revolted, you know. Like, yeah, I think he had his pants stuffed and all that. I mean, oh, man. You know, it was phony as hell. And, like, you know, everybody was saying, oh, yeah, you know. They made him sort of a warlord kind of president. It's revolting.
Well, tell me, okay, so let's sort of tie this back into the book then. I mean, I guess I'm sort of intrigued by the entire idea that this is more of a, that politics in general, especially now, is more of a male versus female kind of thing.
Yeah, which, you know, I find extremely perverse.
Yes, but I think it's enthralling to me is that I never saw it before just now.
Well, I kind of had the hints of it, you know, but I just don't feel capable enough or astute enough to get to the core of the matter myself. I mean, but, you know, when I read this book, it really made a lot of sense to me. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, how much of what this guy says is right on the money?
Okay.
Has he written the definitive book on this matter? I don't think so. It's not that he's that good a writer, I mean, or that bad a writer. But I find some of his observations very compelling.
And that's Stephen J. Ducott, and the title of the book that we're discussing.
Wimp Factor, Gender mm-hmm. Gaps, Holy Wars, and the Politics of Anxious Masculinity.
And I'll make sure that I have a link to this on Powell Books on my website for folks who want to go check it out. But let's get into the book a little bit. Tell me, share with us some ideas that you found in the book that were compelling to you.
Well, this book is, you know, it's mostly about narrow-minded and rigid and conservative men.
Okay.
Because they're the ones who are responding to this image. I'm not sure what he says is true because I'm not a man. I mean, it seems true to me. I'm just seeing it from the perspective of a female.
It may be truer from your perspective because when you're...
Because I'm more sensitized to it, like black people are sensitized to oppression.
Exactly.
And, right, because I don't live it, yeah.
So it's geared and it's more about the right-wing conservative model of the guy. In what ways is he comparing them to, say, the, you know, like John Kerry type of Democrat?
Well, the Republicans are definitely trying to feminize the Democratic Party, and they've done like a pretty good job of it, like so far.
Okay. And the response by the American psyche or the American public has been a real negative response. I think, you know. And I just want to share this. I think that it's kind of dastardly that they're even doing this to begin with.
I think so too.
But it's equally dastardly that the American populace is responding perfectly the way they want them to respond.
Yeah, but it's sort of subconscious because, I mean, you know, the way he talks about it, men have a fear of being feminized. It's sort of, and we live in a patriarchal culture, and, you know, at an early age, you know, young boys are torn away from the arms of their mother and, you know, so to speak, and told that they must reject the, you know, embracing love of the mother, and they must, you know, not be like her, not at all. They have to identify with the father, which is fine if there's a father there, but like in a lot of cases, the father is really emotionally absent, or he's like physically absent, so the boy does not really have anyone to emulate. I mean, personally, I think that men should be in on the fathering at a very early age so that the infants can identify with the men also, you know. Rather than a man coming in later, like I had a friend who said, oh yeah, I don't have anything to do with them until they start talking. Well, that's kind of late, you know, especially if the kid starts talking late.
Sure. I was reading over some of the stuff that you just sent, that you had sent me, and I wanted to read over this one statement, and maybe this is something that's out of the book, but it's really very telling. And it says, male femininity is clearly a taboo in male dominant culture, in part because woman and all things feminine are of lower status. But to really understand the taboo against displaying or even feeling any similarity to women, we have to reflect on the fact that taboos exist only against those things that people want to do, like cross-dressing. So, you know, in essence, the fear is really because the person themselves sort of wants to experience that, but has a huge phobia of that because they might enjoy it. What do you think?
I don't think girls have as much a difficulty, you know, knowing that they are women. There's, I mean, because they can still identify with the main caregiver when they were small, but the boys can't. You know, I don't really think, you know, emotionally that it's good for, you know, human beings, you know, of the male gender to be, you know, so thoroughly, you know, ripped away from the all embracing, you know, comfort and security of their mothers. I think it's bad for them.
All right. Well, I'm talking with Geronimo, and we are, and Geronimo has been on our show several times before, way back in the beginning of All Things Reconsidered, and we're talking about a book that is by Stephen J. Ducott, PhD, and it's called The Wimp Factor, Gender Gaps, Holy Wars, and the Politics of Anxious Masculinity, and we will be right, we're going to take a little quick break, and we'll be right back.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now download off our website at progressive.org. A friend of mine says Bush wants to export democracy because he's got no use for it here in the United States. Actually, Bush has got no use for it in other countries either. Just check out what he's been doing to the Iraqi media, which he's bragged about for being so free. How free is it when Bush threatens to blow up Al Jazeera and when U.S. forces have killed at least 13 journalists there? How free is it when Paul Bremer shuts down the newspaper of Muqtada al-Sadr? How free is it when the Pentagon plants stories in the Iraqi media using fake journalists? All this should come as no surprise, since this administration has been so hostile to independent media here in the U.S. After all, it's planted stories in the U.S. media. by paying journalists like Armstrong Williams to write favorably about administration education policy, by paying the Iraqi National Congress to circulate false stories to Judith Miller, by having stooges like Jeff Gannon right there in the White House press room. As Robert McChesney and John Nichols note at freepress.net, the Bush administration is engaging in a wholesale assault on independent journalism, an assault that was made even more obvious by Ken Tomlinson's shenanigans over at the CPB. Hey, but at least Bush is being consistent. He manipulates the media here, and he manipulates the media in Iraq. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq war and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard, and we could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When you look at a forest, do you see pretty flowers and cute little critters hopping around? Well, when we billionaires look at a forest, we see redwood decks, teak furniture, and reams of bleached white paper. We look at all the untapped natural resources available, and we see opportunity where others can't see the forest for the trees. Aren't you bored of tree huggers whining about the precious old growth forests? Don't they understand the law of supply and demand? The more trees we clear cut, the more scarce we make them, and the more valuable they become as a commodity. So the next time you hear the buzz of chainsaws, know the billionaires are giving Mother Nature more bang for her buck. I'm Zena Fope for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Okay, we're back from our break, and welcome back to All Things Reconsidered. I'm on the line with Geronimo from Sacramento, California, and we are talking about a book by Stephen J. Ducott, and the title of the book is The Wimp Factor, Gender Gaps, Holy Wars, and the Politics of Anxious Masculinity. And when we broke, just to fill you in on what happened in the break, Geronimo and I talked a little bit about just sort of some overall ideas, and one of those is that that men don't seem to be as easily rooted to the earth as women. Isn't that right, Geronimo?
Yeah. I would think that they're alienated. I mean, well, especially the right wing men, and that's why they don't have compassion for the earth. And to them, it's just their rape and pillage. I mean, they don't feel as connected as women do. And I think men, you know, they want what women have, which is kind of that rootedness, that solidness. So they actually envy what they've been told to be against, you know, so that's where, like, a lot of the conflict comes in.
Okay.
A lot of women, you know, a lot of men say, oh, you know, women, you can't live without them. Well, that's very telling. They want the woman, but, you know, then what do they do with her? But I think men set up a lot of barriers between themselves and women as a defense against being feminized. I mean, you know, many of men's fears can be found in the colorful vernacular of everyday macho expressions. You know, you've heard this all the time.
Sure.
Words such as sissy, bitch, mama's boy, wimp, girly man, and pansy. You know, these are terms of hyper-masculine derision that attest to the narrow and rigid boundaries upon which our prevailing notions of maleness are defined. And I really hate to see it, because, you know, there's all different kinds of men. And then, you know, notice, you know, a term or phrase such as he-man is a curious redundancy, and one wonders why you have to say it twice. This suggests that being biologically male is not sufficient to confer or sustained masculinity, which I think it is. You're born a man, you're a man, that's it. You don't have to prove it.
Right, right.
But supposedly, you know, men have to keep reaffirming their masculinity because it isn't really lasting. It has to be reasserted through repetition in words and actions. And it seems that in a patriarchal culture, the most important thing about being a man is not being a woman. You know, it's a reactionary kind of being, and I don't think it should be that way. You know, it's against, you know, I am because I'm against, like, something else. And that puts the women, like, in a very precarious position, too, because the women get really messed up in a patriarchal society because of that, you know.
Well, I think it's also, you know, there's this thing about identifying yourself as what you're against rather than what you're for.
Oh, yeah, and the conservatives do that all the time. That's their whole shtick.
Yeah.
They just wouldn't have a life if they weren't against something.
So, as opposed to, you know, being pro-peace, you know, it's the whole progressive versus regressive. And I can't help but think that this entire, this whole line of thinking while very prevailing, is also a regressive type of line of thinking. It's like, you know, trying to return men and women and male and female relations back to, you know,
Paleolithic.
I was going to say 1950s and 1940s, but you know, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to various degrees, like all the way back.
Yeah, because actually, you know, I think that women carried this country during World War II. You know, I mean, when the men were sent off to fight, because, you know, that's the patriarchal society, the women took over in the factories and.
Yeah, who was it? Robot Betty, you know, or something. You know, there was a popular figure, like a woman who, like...
Riveting somebody. It was,
Riveting Rita, or like whatever.
Rita the Riveter. But, you know, but I think that's, you know, reading the book, and I haven't read the book, but reading some of the things that you've sent me have given me the idea, you know, that what's happening is, you know, is again, it's like returning to a shtick that worked for a period of time, quit working, and then people forgot about it, you know, and so now they're bringing it back up.
The shtick that was prevalent when I was coming up, like in the 50s and the 60s, was the seductive man.
Seductive man?
The Hugh Hefner,
okay,
guy.
Sure.
Who, you know, he was sort of the seducer. And to be a seducer, you have to be kind of charming and kind of worldly and, you know, kind of suave and smooth and clean and all that, you know.
Sure.
And your goal is to go around seducing these young women. And, of course, you know, if the women want to have a lasting relationship, then, you know, they're immediately off the table. and that was sort of the ladies' man, you know. I mean, that was prevalent for a while. Jack Ken, he was, you know, he was kind of an example of that. But now we have the man's man, you know, the He-Man, like the John Wayne, guy who, you know, tries very hard not to understand women. You know, most of his close friends are males. You know, he's not feminine anyway, doesn't even know about it. You know.
And what kind of role, you know, just to sort of also call into light Laura Bush to a certain degree, what kind of role has she played over the last 5 years gender reclassification?
Well, you know, one thing I think is conservative men are rebelling against feminism, which I think kind of, I don't know. I mean, you know, women have to go out and work these days, and some, you know, sometimes they want to have a good job. And you know, I know a lot of women don't like to work. I don't like to be out there, you know, battling it out with the man who wants to do that. But she's playing the dutiful housewife. And then, well, that's why the conservatives got all, you know, shell-shocked about Hillary, because she wasn't the dutiful little wife, you know, who was that stand by her man, you know, well, you know, walk it 10 steps behind. And, you know, they hate her because they think she's a castrating woman. That's another thing, you know, the castrating woman, that's another thing that the conservatives are in an uproar about. And then also they you know, so fearful of Hillary that they you know, imagine that that she has a phallus in her brain. Oh, let's talk about the phallus.
Sure.
This is really important.
Okay.
Every man has a penis, but no one has a phallus. And phallus is that mythic, permanently erect, which typical monolith of omnipotence, male, which signifies power, domination, growth, invulnerability, and freedom from all dependency. One who appears to possess a phallus is seen as lacking nothing and no one. And all guys want this.
This is like omnipotence.
Well, yeah, it's a stand-up guy, which is like another phrase for that.
Stand-up guy, yeah.
Okay. Solid, yeah. Some guy told me this week that he was solid. I thought, yeah, that's it. You're just solid as a person.
I'm never going to be able to have a normal conversation with anyone ever again after this.
Why?
You know, when they say solid, I'm going to go, damn it.
Well, that's just my perspective, you know. But an erection can stand for a phallus, but the reverse is not true. After all, only a phallus, I mean, it's mythic. It comes from the Greek times. Only a phallus is always standing. It's always erect. I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of it, but like I have.
Sure.
And real men naturally fall short because they have an organ which is mostly at rest, which is normal. As if being born male is not enough, and I personally think it is, men must prove that they are really men, that they are phallic men. And this is why campaign consultants will never be out of work, because there are a few places where appearing phallic is more important to men than on the political stage. Yeah, it is. I mean, seeing our candidates, you know, feminized, you know, it's just been so horrible to me, like, you know, Dukakis, and, you know, when he was riding around in that tank, and he looked like a little four-year-old in his first bumper car ride, and he wanted to come across as some leather-necked tough guy, you know, it was ridiculous. And then Kerry, you know, windsurfing, and, you know, Republicans use all these things which are associated with femininity, like France, oh, he's French, you know, because being French is supposedly, you know, feminizing. Kerry, didn't he, like, go on some space?
They had a picture of him coming out of the space shuttle. He went in and got in the suit.
It was really weird. I went, ooh. So, the Republicans are making the Democrats their bitch. And I absolutely hate it. They're like Neanderthals. The Republicans, to me, they might as well have clubs.
It makes me wonder, though, how much, now the biggest question is, why is it that the American population responds to this? Beyond basic psychology, even knowing that this guy is just a complete moron, everyone knew he's a moron.
Well, you didn't quite understand it. I didn't quite understand it. It's very subliminal. It's criminal that the Republicans are doing this. They're working on people's psyches. Mm-hmm. This is really bad. People kind of know something's kind of funny, but they're not exactly sure. Because they're not versed in psychology, they can't really put all the pieces together. I think a lot of the citizens of the United States are confused, and even the ones who aren't confused about this particular thing, but they're just confused because of all the false information that's coming out and the whole fantasy world that the Republicans are foisting upon us.
Sure. This current administration really is just, if they've done nothing else, they have mastered the art of spin and mastered the art of control over communications, just to a degree that I don't think we've seen in a long, long, long time.
No, I don't think I've ever seen this ever. This is a book about fear.
Okay.
Particular fear that has composed the very foundation of male selfhood from antiquity to modern times. Because even in Greek, I heard that the guys in Greek were very misogynistic.
Okay.
This fear has to do with the existence of women. It's the fear of being feminized. For many men, masculinity is a hard-won, a precarious and brittle psychological achievement that must be constantly proven and defended. And I hate that when guys keep thinking they have to keep it, oh, I'm a man. And it's just really, stop it already.
I have a deep voice and the equipment, I never have seen, I've never really been that uncomfortable with, you know, with expressing I guess it's hard for me to
see. That's why I love all you liberal guys, because, you know, you're just more in touch with, you know, you're not all hung up. And I mean, you know, the, what comes to mind to me is, you know, it used to be years ago, the Italian, muscular Italian guy had his, you know, had his gold chain on, all that, oh, yeah, I'm hot, you know. I'm just so macho. And I thought, ew. No, ew. You know, it's like so phony.
Oh.
You know, guys think, you know, there's external factors out there that appear threatening, like, you know, gay men in military shower rooms and feminist women in boardrooms, but the actual threat many men experience is an unconscious internal one, the sense that they are not real men. And I've just seen this everywhere. I mean, both my husbands, you know, I mean, all the guys that I know. Sure. Guys, you know, men have this fantasy of being under constant siege by a plethora of external feminizing forces. But
that is a huge fear, I think, for a lot of guys. I just, you know, but this book illustrates it. And you know what? The fact that so many men responded to the George W. Bush fakery of his so-called swaggered, you know, just
it's
illustrates
right wing men who are like mainly behind W. You know what I mean? There really are not that many right wing women. There are some, but the majority, it's like these white, angry, paranoid, government hating men.
You were going to say Southern rednecks, weren't you?
No, I wasn't. No. I love Southerners down there.
Well, there's a lot of them down here, trust me.
And I know.
I mean, you know, I see the W stickers all the time, and I ride by and glare. Of course, they see all my impeach Bush stickers and do the same thing.
There's a whole gang of these angry, paranoid, and government-hating men who equate the government with a feminine nanny state.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Reagan brought that up. It's not true that the safety net, you know, is like a nanny state, but they're making it that way in the eyes of these guys so that they will oppose it. So these guys, these angry guys, you know, they support the extreme right-wing politicians who reflect their views. But with these men, it's not their masculinity that's the problem. It's their fear of losing it.
And fear can motivate us to do some pretty dastardly things.
Beg pardon?
I said fear can motivate us to do some pretty dastardly
things. I know,
things.
Well, people are fearful. They lose their ability to reason.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done. They've appealed to, I mean, I just think it's so low.
It is. And you know what we're going to do, Geronimo, is we're going to continue this interview next week, I think, and try to delve a little bit deeper into some of the subject matter, although we've done a pretty good job of that tonight. So
there's so much to cover.
There really is.
I think it's so incredibly important.
It definitely explains a lot of things to me.
Me too.
So, you know, that I just went, wow, yeah.
I'm glad you get it. I mean, I didn't want to come across, you know, as like a man, you know.
Well, you know, we know you're that anyway, but.
But, you know, I just wanted to get the word out there about, like, what is going on here.
You know,
when I discovered it, I mean, when I read this book, I mean, it made me sick. It made me nauseated. It made me want to cry. It made me just really terribly upset because, you know, it's hard enough men and women getting along, you know, normally because they don't understand each other. And, you know, having the Republicans, like, doing this. I mean, they've split families right down the middle into liberal conservative. I mean, it's really very basic. I mean, I feel like, you know, they're just ripping our innards, like all of us.
And it could very well be that this is the base issue that's been polarizing the country.
I think it is. I mean, because I think homophobia stems from femophobia.
Okay.
This word femophobia, like fear of women.
Sure.
I think that's why the right wing guys are so down on gays, because gays supposedly, you know, are the bottoms, and they're the submissive, receptive ones like women. You know, therefore, they are like women, and therefore they are bad. And these right wing guys are afraid that, you know, somehow gays are gonna like be tops on them or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to have to cut it there, hon, for this week, because we're...
Well, good. I'm glad we're going to continue it next week, because there's more to talk about. And, you know, I'll try to get more material.
Okay, that'd be great. All right, so thank you for joining us this week, and we'll get back with you next week. This has been Geronimo on us, or on, not on us, but with us on All Things Reconsidered. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Bruce.
And we'll talk. Well,
get the word out on this.
Absolutely, and we'll talk some more next week. All right, this is Bruce Birchback. That was a wonderful interview we had with Geronimo on the Wimp Factor, and you can reach if you want to get to see that book. What you can do is you can visit our website, allthingsreconsidered.org, and go under Show Preview. And under Show Preview, there is a link directly to the Powell's book of that same name. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with you after this break.
You are listening to All Things Reconsidered, the weekly radio program that brings you alternative perspectives on the events of the day.
Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. If the Republicans have problems with their base, so too do the Democrats have with theirs, but for different reasons. Use specific issues around the general anti-American theme, Democrats are splintered into hundreds of different groups, each with a pet issue which, in their mind, is the most important issue in the world. And God forbid that someone should use the wrong phrase or even present the appearance of disagreement. This doesn't mean to say that these issues aren't important. Human rights, the environment, free and fair elections, these are all very high priority and need to be dealt with on a massive scale. But if the human rights people are fighting with the environmentalists who are fighting with the election reform people, it just makes things easier for the right wing to use divide and conquer tactics. But even so, all the petty bickering that goes on within the liberal movement could be wiped out if the leadership of the Democratic Party exhibited any signs of, well, leadership. All too many at the top of the party are more interested in keeping their positions than they are in the welfare of the nation or of the party. And there are still those who vainly cling to the idea that if they cooperate with the Republicans will return the favor. After 25 years of bad treatment, you'd think they'd have learned by now. I wish I could say that things will get better in the immediate future, but you'll forgive me if I'm skeptical. Remember, like Will Rogers, I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to 4thEstateRadio.com. That's 4thEstateRadio.com.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no Oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
All right, we're back with All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and I'm your host for the evening, and as I am each and every Sunday night at 10 o'clock. You just heard a couple of promos, several promos there. Actually, really want to push pretty hard for my friend Bob Kincaid, who is relaunching his show, and that's, you can get there, headonradio.com. And also, I'm also in another radio show called Fourth Estate Radio, and that's, you can reach that, fourthestateradio.com. Anyway, getting back to the business of the day. A couple of stories came up, and this was one that I guess I had missed somehow today, but I missed it today, didn't miss it tonight, so therefore we're good to go. But that story is, and this is, I just want to give you a quick, this is out of the Sunday Herald from Scotland, and the story is revealed, the secret cabal which spun for Blair. Britain ran a covert dirty tricks operation designed specifically to produce misleading intelligence that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction to give the UK a justifiable excuse to wage war on Iraq. Codenamed Operation Rockingham, established by the Defense Intelligence Staff within the Ministry of Defense in 1991, it was set up to cherry-pick intelligence proving an active Iraqi WMD program, and to ignore and squash intelligence, or quash intelligence, which indicated that Saddam's stockpiles had been destroyed or wound down. The existence of Operation Rockingham has been confirmed by Scott Ritter, the former UN chief weapons inspector, and a U.S. military intelligence officer. He knew members of the Operation Rockingham team and described the unit as dangerous, but insisted they were not rogue agents acting without government backing. This policy was coming from the very highest levels, he added. Rockingham was spinning reports and emphasizing reports that showed non-compliance by Iraq with UN inspections, and quashing those which showed compliance. It was cherry-picking intelligence. And I sigh. You know, I sigh deeply. Oh, by the way, the sigh was not in the story. But I sigh deeply, and I'll tell you why I sigh deeply, and the biggest reason is that it amazes me just how much, I mean, how many lies. I mean, it's like the deeper we go, the more lies we uncover, lies about lies about lies about lies. It's almost like there was a specific one lie that was told early on, and ever since then, everything else, all of the other lies have been built upon this lie, you know, this particular lie, whatever it was, to hide and cover up and 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 hide and cover up some more. You know, and so what I'm seeing is, and this is just my own personal analysis, is that the lies are beginning to come unraveled. And part of the lies Patrick Fitzgerald, I believe, is focusing on some of the lies. Something that I read earlier today actually indicated that the FBI had reopened an investigation into the Niger, the forged yellow cake documents. Even though they're headed by, Mr. Torture himself, Gonzalez, Alberto Gonzalez, the Justice Department is headed up by the Attorney General, it really amazes me that just all of the lies. It's like we hear more and more lies, and I think it's almost desensitizing in a way. It's like we have become so used to hearing the lies and so used to, more and more of this coming out in the media that, that we're just like, oh, well, yeah, it's just another lie, whatever. And we change the channel to Law and Order or Criminal Intent or whatever it is that's on your agenda for the evening watching television. I don't watch TV, but nonetheless, we found ourselves in a situation where lies have become the standard in communication. Not only has it become has lying and the lack of integrity and the lack of backbone and the lack of principle become the standard operating procedure of government, but now the government, we noticed this, and actually we heard about this in the early part of the show. I played a little weekly thing that Matt Rothschild over at The Progressive, a great magazine, by the way, I am a subscriber. Matt Rothschild did a little piece that we heard earlier that was talking about the fact that the U.S. was caught red-handed selling news stories to put in the Iraqi newspapers, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, we can't, all in up in arms for a few days. But the reality is they just got caught doing this here in the United States not long ago with Armstrong Williams, and there was a lady, and I can't remember her name, but primarily Armstrong Williams, who had a TV show, who was pushing the whole No Child Left Behind thing as if it were the greatest thing since sliced bread, so the lies get deeper and deeper, and I got to tell you, it's really difficult for me to watch this. I told my kids, when that man comes on television, I'm like, don't pay attention to him. And they're like, why? That's the president. I said, because that man lies more than anyone we have ever seen in our lifetimes. Everything he says is a lie. A good friend of mine calls the Bush regime opposite world. They operate in opposite world. So whatever you hear them say, if you just imagine whatever the opposite is, that's pretty much where the truth is at. So there's my rant on lying. And I'm not quite done yet. And reality is that we know that they do it. We know that their lying and their ability to stretch the truth and pull the truth and squeeze the truth. I mean, they are all about the power, and they're all about making sure that they retain it at any cost. And you and I, ladies and gentlemen, you and I will be the first to be casualties in that war of power, if it ever had to come down to it. I would encourage you to, if you are not involved already, to go to worldcan'twait.net and check those people out, because they're working hard to try to, create a movement in this country to drive this guy from power. So if you're not involved in that, check it out. I'm not going to tell you to get involved in it, but if you do so, feel so inclined, then that can't be all bad, because at least you're getting involved. The last thing before I go off and do another... let me just do this story first. The U.S. is... This is out of 1010 WINS in Washington. The 9/11... the 9/11 Commission. They're still around, I think. Or at least... I don't know if they've been disbanded yet or not. But Thomas Kane is still around. The U.S. is, they're saying that the U.S. is at great risk for more terrorist attacks because Congress and the White House have failed to enact several strong security measures. And I'm wondering what they're thinking. You know, what they're saying by what would be strong security. The former chairman Thomas Kane said of the group's release of a report Monday assessing how well the recommendations have been followed, he says it's not a priority for the government right now. More than 4 years after 9/11, people are not paying attention, the former Republican governor of New Jersey said. God help us if we have another attack. You know, I'm laughing a little bit here, and I guess it's a kind of, that's kind of crazy to be laughing about the fact that we could have a terrorist attack in this country again. But I got to tell you, you know, I've seen the bumper sticker that says that we are creating terrorists faster than we can kill them. And I got to tell you, based on our actions overseas, the single most important thing that we could do as a nation to defeat terrorism is to stop creating them. And I don't want to get off into a rant here. I really don't. But, you know, the reality is that we're over here, you know, these people are talking about how to protect ourselves and how to protect. Well, don't create an atmosphere where people hate you. If you do that, then the chances are that they're going to respond in kind, okay? Now, a report came out today, or it was either, it was sometime over the weekend, that said that of the 1,300 insurgents, there's that word again, of the 1,300 insurgents who have been arrested in Iraq over the last however long, guess how many were Iraqis? Okay, I'm not hearing anyone. Anyway, if you guessed 1,300, you would be correct. Okay, so we're in Iraq, and at first we're claiming, oh, it's all these foreigners who are coming into Iraq to fight us, and no, we're fighting them there so that we don't fight them here, and all this other wonderful stuff. But the reality is, here's the reality. You want to hear some reality? Here's some reality for you. We invaded a country. We are occupying that country. We are creating terrorists faster than we can kill them by being there. There's some reality for you. Okay. So, you know, if you hear this report about the 9/11 Commission coming out and, you know, talking about the things we need to do to protect ourselves, well, you know something, if anything we need to do to protect ourselves, perhaps the first thing we need to do is to drive this regime from power that's in charge of our country, that has taken over, that has hijacked our country. If that's seditious talk, then so be it. But the reality is of this situation that we are in deep trouble now. And so if you're hearing this broadcast and, you know, the best thing I can tell you is, you know, get off your butt. Go out and do something. Get involved with some local group that's trying to, you know, speak out against this. Because this is the way, it's, this is the way that we're going to build a solid resistance to this kind of country and to this kind of regime. We're getting up against the top of the hour, and I, you know, as and you know what, I really need to take this to a two-hour show sometime, but I hate to do that because right before me is Rama, my friend Rama, and right after me is my friend Peter Werby. So I'm like stuck in this hour. Maybe we'll go to a different night, but it's been really wonderful being with you this week. And you know, if anything, if you can do anything this week to go out and be a part of your community and be active and do some things for yourself and for the other people that are around you. You know, let go of this, the selfishness and really get out and try to work with people, because the reality is that the only change that we're ever going to make in this country is going to be if we're out in the streets and we're out there speaking our minds. All right, this has been Bruce Birch, and one more time again, we've done another All Things Reconsidered, and visit us online. Let's see, let me pull up the little closing music here. You've been listening to All Things Reconsidered. You can reach us online at allthingsreconsidered.org. Coming up next on this stream, don't go anywhere, is Peter Werby, Night Call from WRIF in Detroit. We restream his show with permission. This week, 7 to 10, check out headonradio.com. That's headonradio.com with Bob Kincaid. And the next Saturday night at, from 10 to 12, check out fourthestateradio.com. We are changing the face of media in this country, and we're going to make it something that it needs to be, which is the true check and balance. It's been wonderful being in your home and listening, you know, or being there to provide entertainment for you tonight. My name is Bruce Birch, and this has been All Things Reconsidered. We're experiencing a little bit of problem with that particular stream, so just give me a second, and I will pull up a different way to go about it. You can also reach, you can also go to, this is Bruce again, by the way, in case you were wondering. I'm sure you already knew that, but you can also go to WRIF.com and pull up their link that way. So anyway, certainly hope that you have enjoyed the show this evening, and we will try to make sure that we provide you with more entertainment next week. And I'm sort of killing time right now to get this stream going, but nonetheless, that's what we're doing.